Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, Slackers. Season 5 is back. The wheels are turning and we are in motion again. One of the finest music podcasts out there anywhere. Episode 1 last week was with Bicep. It welcomed in the first foray into podcast goodness of 2021. We kind of smashed it a bit in 2020. Was that due to there being a lack of things to do, existential dread, not being able to leave the house and having an infinite amount of artists at your disposal due to the fact that there was no touring or PR opportunities? You bet your damn ass it was. Like, if you were looking for the silver lining in it, which, let's be honest, there's not very many there, but being able to get artists on Zoom and being able to move doing this on Zoom has helped greatly, because before that I was traveling around all the country to get in front of people, and now we know that, that doesn't need to happen anymore. I hope you're good. My name is Phil Taggart. The whole idea of this podcast is to get to know some artists, get to know where they're coming from musically, and just shoot the breeze, really, in a musical form. At the very beginning of each podcast, we play an early demo to get like an idea of where they're coming from. Last week on season 5, episode 1, it was so long since I uploaded a new podcast that I uploaded it without the demo. And that was really foolish, because the demo last week was a demo of Porcelain, which is Moby's biggest tune. And it's amazing. It's all on acoustic guitar. Like, you can hear the crackles in the background. It sounds so different to what it ended up being. And I thought I'd fixed it and put it back up. And I got a couple of messages during the week from people going, listen, the whole idea was about the demo and you haven't put it up. So listen, it will be amended. The demo will be up there. If you've listened to it and you were like going, I just heard Phil Taggart going, and that was, and this is, yeah. It will be up there, I promise. Thank you as well to the couple of you that subscribe to the Slacker Patreon during the week. It's just patreon.com/slackerpodcast. Mad love to you for that. Like, if you've been digging through all of the 5 bajillion episodes that we've done and you want to give some coppers to the independent content, then that would be amazing. It's patreon.com/slackerpodcast. This podcast is sponsored by Chill the Beats. Chill the Beats is the best music program on Spotify. It is 2 hours of incredibly well curated chill music, whether that's hip hop, whether that's techno, whether that's pop, whether that's folk. It's all a little bit alternative, and it's there for anybody who has a little bit of anxiety in their life, has a little bit of stress in their life, or just needs that moment to relax with good tunes, good chat. And it's presented by a 7-foot gold stallion of a man called Phil Taggart. I'll put a link to Chill the Beats below. It is, I think it's the bigger of the two podcasts. At the moment, Slacker Podcast has been going for years, but Chill the Beats has taken off in a very, very big and direct way. So if you ever listen to me do the Chillest Show on Radio 1, or you've listened to me on radio before where I'm playing records, well, I'm doing it on Spotify now. I've also got a show starting on Radio Ulster this week as well. But listen, Chill the Beats, that's where it's at. I'll link to it below. So last week we had Bicep. This week we're staying with the Bees. We're going to Belfast City via London for the duo that are really conquering dance music over the last couple of years. They just released Isles, their second album, which went to number 2 in the charts, which is absolutely incredible for any dance record, and specifically me being Northern Irish and them being Northern Irish, it was a bit of a Northern Irish situation. Do you know what I'm saying? Situation. So like, it's been a long time coming. It was great to have Bicep on the podcast. Here they are. Bicep on the Slacker Podcast in 3, 2, 1.
Our actual studio was directly behind the bar and the snooker table that they had in the main bar area. Our studio's right behind it. And every morning we'd pop out to kind of use the microwave or boil a kettle and just do little bits and pieces. And there's this guy that would sit at the bar every day, and he would always be having like a Corona or a beer. Like
Desperados.
Sort of, yeah, Desperados. About 11 in the morning. And he'd always be sitting in there just chilling, relaxing at the bar. And it was one of those things where you kind of popped out and there was no real reason to sort of chat at length. But we'd say hello. Hey, how you doing, man? You okay? Pop back in. And after a while, we somehow struck up a bit of a conversation. And he mentioned, I think it was like a 10 or a 15 grand reverb or something. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, we used to use this.
Got 4 of them.
And he said something like that. And we were a bit like, oh, I wonder who this is. And he said he was Mike. And so we were just chatting away. And then we were like, right, let's go back in. And did a wee bit of research. And it turned out it was Mike Chapman, who wrote My Sharona, Lonely at Christmas. He did the Blondie albums. You know, he had it was like one of the most famous record producers ever. And he had been in he was in recording at the time, and he'd been in for a couple of months. And then it ended up, you know, kind of funny that we just chatted away to him while scrambling eggs in a bowl and just chatting away. So it was just funny, some of the characters you just rub shoulders with every day. We'd have no idea, you know what I mean? He had no airs and graces about him. He was very chill, just totally, totally chill.
It's it is mad, those places, because like there's a lot of these studios in London tend to sprout up and last for about maybe 5 years, 6 years, and then they get bought over by developers and then they go somewhere else, and it keeps it quite fluid. I was in a studio in Hackney about 2 months ago, and it was just like a couple of different studio spaces. Really, really cool. Like, you know, like wooden paneling the whole way up all the walls. Yeah. Like, you know, it looked like something from the 70s. And as I was like going into the sort of unisex toilets, there was only one toilet, and PJ Harvey walks out of it as I'm walking into it. And I'm just like going, oh my God, this is so weird. I don't know what to do. What do you do in a situation like this? I'm just like, just be cool, be normal. Just
you got to keep your cool when you're at work, because it's like, it's obviously they're all kind of in doing their own thing and kind of in their own safe space, as it were. So
something in the toilets. Yeah, you just bump into random people you recognize and you try and Google them all day.
Exactly. You're absolutely nothing done. Right, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's the Slacker Podcast, and we, that's it. That's all the good stories told. So I'm like, we'll end it there, lads. I'll see you later. All the best.
Thank you.
We've got a little demo to kick us off. It's a really short one. It's called Hang Drum, and listen, we'll talk about it after we hear it. We'll be right back. know, we get demos in all sorts of different shapes and sizes from different eras, from the very start, from the middle, from the current bits, and that's more of an up-to-date demo, isn't it?
That was basically for the album. What the process we kind of changed to is, like, every time we finished the day, we'd spend 10 minutes just burn off what we'd worked on that day, and like through the album we had like easily 150 demos of stuff we were working on, and every day we're fusing together ideas, different tracks together, and that was one of the early that's very early on the writing process, where we kind of just found the vocal possibly. To be honest, I can't even remember making that, because it went through like 3 or 4 different iterations. Yeah.
But that's now 2 separate songs in the album, that track. That's Apricots. That's the vocal from Apricots pitched up. Uh-huh. And then that's the drums of Saku. So it's like it's the 2 singles put together. And that was actually that was a very much an idea. And yeah, we didn't really, to be honest, we just felt it was a bit,
it was a good idea, so we split it into 2
Yeah, tracks. We just split it up. And I don't think it worked as well. I think it worked better as 2 separate ideas, but you can...
I've heard both tracks now. Like Saku, as we record this, isn't out for another week. Yeah. But I've heard both, and like when you listen to that after, it's such a head fuck, because that one's so busy, and the other two are
that was the first thing I said to Matt. It was like that clav annoys me, the way that's the whole point of like we try and like build stuff up quite densely and then strip it back.
Like a half the process for us is removing rather than adding. Like we tend to cook it pretty hard with chuck everything in, and we used to kind of keep it all in. I think we're trying to focus on stripping things back a bit, and you know, kind of the placement of that vocal kind of came a bit off those drums, but then when you stripped away all the drums, the final Apricots is actually very sparse.
Music generally is. I think it takes a lot of confidence in your abilities as a writer and a creator to leave space in music.
I think all the music we like and listen to, like you listen to like Basic Channel and stuff, and the simplicity is like and the detail comes in the repetition and the like space you leave it. It's like I think we concentrated quite a lot in the mix in the album, trying to leave space, and so like you know we spend money on these reverbs, but like when you cook the track too heavily, you can't even hear the reverb. So you know, like we try to make them part of the songs. You know, like write the tracks not around the delays and reverbs and stuff, but we really wanted to hear the chorus echo tape, and you know, like things like that. Like we wanted texture in it rather than just like everything really loud in your face, and you know that kind of how you'd mix it for a club almost.
Another thing is that like kind of, I mean, this has just happened organically, but we obviously we're from a I wouldn't say a techno background at all, but we listened, we went clubbing a lot and spent a lot of time shine, listened to a lot of techno and DJed a lot of stuff like that when we were younger. And also a lot of fundamentally quite stripped back. And then I suppose we've kind of fused that over time with much more like maybe musical elements, but I still think the drum programming stuff, we quite like it stripped. And then obviously when we start to play live, we busy things up a bit more. But it's quite nice for like the production stuff and the album stuff now to keep it quite, I mean, we deliberately keep it quite dialed back.
150 tracks, like you being selectors and you guys being curators, like you're not the same as like somebody signed to a major label that would have an A&R or have an A&R team. Like surely, like, you know, you guys really are the A&R of your own music, really?
I mean, it's quite easy when you have the process where you're making lots of demos and you've got lots of little stuff burnt off that you don't attach the stuff to heavily. So it's like it freezes up almost, just saying, okay, this is a demo. We can always come back to everything, record everything, come back to it. And usually a lot of ones that are good will sit and we can come back to them in 3 or 4 months and they still sound good. It's worse if you spend a week on a track and get really attached to it, try and mix it slightly. And then you're like attached to it rather than when you're constantly churning out like little small demos, even if it's like the end of the day burning something off, you end up it way more free and not attached to the, like, say if you said, I'm going to write this album, 10 songs, you need to make those 10 songs work. Whereas
it's like doing remixes, you're forced to finish it and you're like, I'd hate this.
Yeah, we 6 months off it and then we'll come back.
I think remixing is like, for us, we enjoy doing it, but I think sometimes when there's a deadline and you have to reach an end goal, the amount of times we just want to bin it and just think, right, this is not working. And the nice thing is with obviously writing things, especially things like albums where it's like so broad, we bin half of it, more than half of it, like 80-90% of it. And then obviously it can just sit, when I say bin, I just mean stick it somewhere on the hard drive and you just don't come near it for a few years. And then we do come back to stuff, and then maybe it's kind of you remove a load of parts and keep one element. Like Glue, we made two or three years before we actually made it. Mm-hmm. But it had a different melody and different pads and no vocal. And then we came back to it when we were writing the album, liked the drums and didn't like anything else, and just scrapped everything and rewrote over the top of it. And that's just an idea that didn't make it 3 years before. And then in 3 years' time, you kind of come back to it and
It's the same with the Apricots. It probably was one of the first demos we made, but the last track we finished, because we knew we liked the vocal, but we never really got it working. And it kind of came together when we knew what the rest of the album was going to sound like, and we knew where that could we could place it, which is not like the normal process we go through.
And we had another demo that had the synths and the strings worked out, but that was an ambient demo, and we kind of fused them together, and we kind of got we definitely sit down some days and just meld demos together, just repitch them, change the key of stuff, you know, and kind of got comfortable with sort of knowing how to pitch stuff to fit, you know, jackhammer stuff together, basically.
Definitely can't come in every day and create. Like, sometimes it has to be coming in and doing work. It's like having meetings all day and then not answering your emails. Do you know what I mean? You can, and like, you need to do both. I wanted to talk about Glue really quickly, right? Because it's probably one of the most recognizable, like, alternative dance songs of the last 5 years, probably. It like, I heard somebody say to me, and this made me bust my whole laugh, and I don't know whether you'll take this as a compliment or as an insult. Have you heard this?
We got tweeted it a few times.
Somebody said to me, for the benefit of our listeners that don't know, they said Biceps Glue is like Wonderwall for ketamine heads. And like, I was thinking about this today, right? I was like, how would I take that if I was in Bicep? I was like, I would take that fucking well, because it makes it like, basically like, we have the biggest song in dance music.
I know. I mean, yeah, it's funny. Like, we didn't really, I mean, don't take offense. Don't take much. I mean, it's funny. It's funny. Like, it's amazing. Like, we honestly, we were playing it out for about, like at least 6 months. We were doing the live show 6 months before we had the album out, and we were slipping it into the live show, and like, we remember playing at Coachella and barely a person moved. Like, people just,
I think that's Coachella though. Like, Coachella
but it definitely didn't have that instant effect on the dance floor the way other stuff would. You know, we were playing like Rain and Aura, and they worked really well, and Glue definitely didn't work, and it took quite a while for it to sort of like permeate, I think. And
we were questioning even on the album.
Yeah, and it was definitely like, it was, they wanted to, Ninja wanted to use a single, and we were like, okay, cool, like, you know best. But it certainly didn't stand out to us as whether it would work or not. And I know a few of my friends that were in dance music as well were like, oh, that's very, very chilled out, isn't it? Like, you know, it's quite strange. Like, I think there was not like a huge amount of confidence that we felt from some of our peers and stuff on ourselves about, you know, it being like a big single or anything. It was just something that didn't stand out as one of those tracks. Do you know what I mean?
It is.
And we loved it.
Yeah. It is weird like that. Cause like, you know, traditionally when you go with a big single off an album, it's normally like the big energy one or whatever. Yeah. Like this feels like it's more like this pared down third or fourth single or whatever, but it's the one that everybody has latched onto.
Yeah, I know, it's funny that it just goes to show. I mean, I think we just concentrate on we don't try and think too much about how stuff's received. Even more so now, I think that's given us more confidence. Don't think about how it's going to be received. Don't second guess yourself. Just make the music that you want to make. Put it out there, and then, you know, see how it goes down.
Like, you guys have lived through the whole fucking EDM shit that's come around, right? Like,
it feels like twice, because hard dance was big in the UK in the 90s, and then in America got it. Remember Lisa Lashes and all that?
Exactly. Planet Love's coming back for us all.
Yeah.
But like, when like, you're never going to do that commercial side of things, I don't think, anyway, right? So like, when you had written a song like Just, right, did you ever think that you would have something that was even bigger? Did you feel at that time there was like a glass ceiling in terms of like underground dance music?
I think we definitely felt like that was the first time we, that was the turning point where we really, really questioned, like thought about our music and, you know, like every EP needed to count. But then we thought even further onto that, and then that's what, where the album came from. We kind of needed to express ourselves in like a longer format and, you know, do these things that might possibly not work on a dance floor. Like we didn't envisage the live show and stuff at that stage, but we kind of just wanted to express the musical ideas across a longer format.
Just as about the point where we both got the hang of piano, like we'd kind of been self-taught, and it was one of those things where, it's, you know, you do a lot of the, like a lot of 90s house stuff and stuff we'd done before is quite loopy. You do it by ear. If you kind of know your scales, you can kind of roughly, you know, you can get a melody roughly, you know, sounding correct. But then
Pardon? Did you take piano lessons?
I did for like 3 or 4 years, yeah.
I didn't, but just I've just kind of self-taught. But like just, I mean, we just picked it up slowly through, it's, I mean, I think over time,
I think,
you know.
There's a difference between like learning and like theory. Like by like a year or so in, it was more a case of I was breaking down songs, working out how they put them together. Like a lot of piano tunes, a lot of tunes I love were actually just very simple piano. And I was just trying to understand how the motion element came into that. And yeah. I don't think it's a case of like, I don't think either of us want to be like pianists or anything, but we can definitely play and work our way around the keyboard.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm confident across keys and how, like, you know, it's more a case, I think, of like using the piano to actually write and, you know, like harness emotion across the piano.
I mean, that's the main thing. That's the main thing. First, I'll sit down piano and just thrash ideas out there. I have to work on piano first. And just was about the first time that we'd kind of got our head around it not being guesswork, you know, we actually sit down and we're able to, like, you know, play it. And I think that's definitely, I mean, the thing is, I mean, that's just something we try and build on constantly, you know what I mean? We're just trying to get better and understand it all better. Do spend quite a lot of time trying to like analyze why things feel the way they feel and kind of get on, not just like guess the emotions, you have to understand why you're doing stuff and sort of
look at like other bands and how they kind of do have little techniques. Radiohead are always a really good one to look at because they always try and hide stuff within their music, and it might not be glaringly obvious, but it has longevity sometimes. Yeah. And
Aphex Twin's the same.
Yeah, Aphex the same. It's like he can roll a 2-note chord over 7 minutes and still not feel boring. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. It's unbelievably layered, but done in a way that it doesn't automatically feel like that straight away. Like you dig into some Radiohead stuff. Like, I mean, I play bass, and some of the bass lines that they have, I can't even go near. Like, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. But we were talking about the sort of long form, right? The record. Like, I mean, I'm not gonna say your genre because you don't really have one. Like, you're kind of a mixture of like all the best bits of underground dance, but like, it's never, dance music in general has never been something that has appreciated the album format as much as many other genres have. Like, people will be happy to constantly release singles or constantly release EPs.
There's quite a few reasons from that. I think it's like, it's because you're conflicted to make stuff work in a club. If you're making a club album, it's like, should you make these tracks work? Every single one needs to work in a club. Should they all be hits? Should they, like, it's usually a case of they'll put a couple of hits on and then it'll be sandwiched between ambient tracks, which are kind of just end up being quite filler.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you're, and it's also very hard to write 12 A-side kind of dance floor tracks. And then also that would mean they would all have, like when you're making stuff that works on a dance floor hits, they used to have to be kind of unique, sound different, or have like a quality that's like, it's not coherent. So if you think of like an album format and you have 12 songs for as a band, you're using all the same equipment and you want to have that coherence. If it's a dance music album, you don't want that coherence. You want to have like a fresh track, every single one. And there's so many little reasons. And also how you mix stuff. It's like when you're mixing stuff for a club, you try and make it
a lot hotter. It's not dynamic, really.
Yeah, a lot more mono. Give all the space to like you want it to feel a bit like punchier. And then that means you lose other elements like the dynamics and the reverbs and the delays don't sound as like detailed. So like it's, the compromises are really hard to kind of, like we found it even with this album, it's like, where do we draw the line in making stuff work for a dance floor? And early on in the process, we were like, let's cut it down and let's make these tracks way more soft, almost home listening versions. and then use the live show to develop these into more techno club focused tracks where we can really go all out in the mix, go all out in the kind of the
just hard, cook them up a bit.
Yeah, yeah, like cook it up a bit.
So it's a very active
just realizing
idea for the album that was just going to be that this is a more home listening. There's no 4/4 like house beats or techno beats on the album. Everything's broken up. We decided we want to give ourselves a lot more space, get the songwriting part that we're really happy with, but don't feel that any of these really need to work as for DJs. Yes, it's great if they do, but we would definitely did that was not a focus at all with but we knew when we do the live show and perform it, we can we're going to remake the whole album as a much more techno focused album.
It's such a compromise to make it 4/4 and a club in terms of your creativity. And I think that's like the main point of how it makes it hard for dance albums to kind of survive.
But like, really don't, aren't like, you know, if live music was a thing at the moment, right? Surely you've built yourself into a situation now where you're able to have your cake and eat it, right? Where you can go and do the artistry side and play live and play your songs and play the, you know, the creations that you have. But you'll still get booked for banging DJ sets, and you can go and play like other people's music and drop in like your own at the end of the night or whatever.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think if we want to spend our time creating, and I think doing the live show and really working as a team with the visuals and the lights,
you get
way more of a buzz. And also, we spend most of our days in the studio. We don't really spend most of our days digging, even though we spend a lot of time digging. 90% of the time, we'll be on synths playing music, you know, like recreating music, you know, like making demos. And it's that's what we want to do live. It's like, I think DJing, we've done it for like 10 years now, and it feels like
it's good fun, but it's just you can't beat live. Basically, it's a lot more of a stressful day, and obviously you're hauling around all the equipment and everything, but it's definitely like, I think the immediacy of working on something and then being able to perform it and change it every time, and obviously hone in how you perform it. Like over the course of the last tour, we changed how we performed the tracks quite a lot. And you know, by the end, some of them were like completely different songs than the originals, and that's just quite fun to sort of shape something slowly, you know.
Also DJing's changed for us. It's not like we are warming up for like in a kind of class club every week. It's generally we're playing big festivals, and if we don't play Glue, we get like
bottled
with piss.
Sometimes it just doesn't work. We're playing for like techno DJ, like Ben Clark or something, we're like, we can't just play Glue last tune. It's just a bit weird because it's such a dark vibe. And then next day, Twitter will be like, I came all the way from Newcastle.
Awful. Worst DJ. Like we actually had that after the last tour where we stopped playing live and had a couple of DJ shows. And we actually had to learn to get on top of DJing again, because the first shows we did, we were like, right, we're not playing our own tunes anymore. We're going to just play a load of techno and like, you know, enjoy it. And just, you know, again, people are just like, what, this is such a waste of money, didn't play this. And people actually associate it now with the live. So I think we definitely have to, maybe if we're going to DJ again, find a middle ground.
Like we go to DJ and they're like, Printworks is way better than this.
you are getting that situation now. You're like, play Wonderwall, play Glue. That's what happens when you have hit records. But I mean, this, the relationship of this is all born out of dance music and dance culture in Northern Ireland, and it's something that's been massively important culturally over the last like 30 odd years. Absolutely huge. It's very hard to explain, but the only thing I can liken it to would have been punk rock in the 70s, where it was something that brought communities together in a way that nothing really was doing before.
Yeah, we've referenced that as well a few times. Yeah. Definitely, like with the Stiff Little Fingers and the whole punk thing, and then
Belfast had good subcultures, especially even growing up. They had like a little goth scene, little indie scene.
They love a wee subculture.
You still do. You go around City Hall and you still have the goths. I'm like, you don't get goths in London.
Yeah.
You don't get punks, like proper punks.
Yeah, but it's definitely, I think it's just been, it is as simple as just, there's no flags associated with the music, and it's very easy to kind of, I think it's just a great place.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
To kind of just, I think it definitely does in Northern Ireland break down some of those sort of social barriers and some of those divides and lets people just sort of cut loose for a bit. And on top of
it's very musical. I was trying to explain this to, like, I think a lot of the bars, there's really good bars that play good music, a range of good music. And like, I remember growing up and you're just hearing you go into like Katie Daly's, I remember, and stuff, and it would be like such a range of music from like, even like emo-y goth stuff to like, yeah, just classic rock to even the Chemical Brothers-esque stuff. You know, it was that kind of a range, and that was kind of across the board, I remember.
Well, it's because I think it's also a subconscious thing that I think people just naturally, music's just very important in Northern Ireland because of that, and because of just, and also I think maybe it's just, music's quite a way that people find it maybe, I mean, Irish people maybe aren't the best at expressing themselves sometimes, like verbally. I think music. I mean, whereas I think music's just quite an easy way for people to bond over. I think it's quite like
easy way to cry.
Yeah,
exactly. Nothing like bumping into a random Jordan in the toilets of Shine, telling, "I love you, brother. I love you, brother."
That's the only place it happens.
Yeah, I would. You know what? Like anything that can get some positive emotion out of the young men in Northern Ireland is a good thing, I think. But like, totally. But like, when you guys were in Belfast when you were sort of setting up the blog and stuff, and you were going to club nights. I mean, like Shine has talked about quite a lot, but there are other clubs, and there was other people like Timmy Stewart and people what was the club down in Cathedral Choir? Was it called Yellow or something? I remember seeing Box Cutter.
Yellow, yeah.
There was a lot of like sort of dance nights like floating around.
We left Belfast when we were 18, and it really was Shine was the dominant one. Like Vico's had just shut, and it was Shine
Art School was good as well.
But I think that had shut as well. Like it was just like we know Timmy really well, and everything kind of booted off whilst we were at uni because we left about 2005.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so it's really, the blog actually happened later, 2007, whilst we'd moved to uni. We're away, and I was in Newcastle, and he's in Manchester. And obviously, like Twitch and all the nights then started popping up, and I think a lot of the small, and there was Mono as well. Do you remember Mono?
Network as well.
Yeah. Mm. But Shine was definitely, when we went Shine when we were at school, not actually when we were able to go. So we were going when we were 16, 17.
But it would have
and
been,
then moved
it,
away.
But it was like Shine wasn't just like one place. It was like almost like three bars in one. You know, like you've got the
Bunnity.
Like the Bunnity.
And the snack bar. Like it was the old Shine, you know, before when it was like 3,000-4,000 people and they had drum and bass nights, London Electricity and all playing LTJ Bookham and all. And it was very broad musically then, I think. And obviously, I think when the capacity got smaller, it was more techno-focused.
Yeah, it was like, I remember just going to see like Rick McClellan and Timmy Stewart in the back bar. I didn't even know who was headlining, but I'd go and then just hear that. That was like almost like a deep house, little space.
We used to have, me and Rory used to talk about Timmy Stewart house, and it was a way to describe type of particular type of house. We were just getting that's like, oh, it's a tight year record because yeah, that sort of back bar, you know, the Shine back bar was when you heard that sort of 120 BPM, you know, chuggy house that kind of you didn't get in the other rooms.
Yeah.
But what's the ethos is the wrong word. Like, what do you do right back in those days when you're going to a club, right? You don't have Shazam and you don't know the DJ, but you're dying to hear that track and you don't know it. Like, what do you go through to do that?
Well, Juno used to be like, there was all, and there was hard to find records. Do you remember Hard to Find Records? There was an old vinyl website called Hard to Find Records, but it was just trawling, old school trawling. It was back then where you'd hear something and a year later you'd stumble across the vinyl in a record shop and be like, oh my God, I've got it. Do you know what I mean? And you'd be on forums hunting down, searching, you know, looking for track listings.
And like essential mixes, you'd be just trying to ask people what that tune was.
It was definitely, and then you get people who are really knowledgeable and you go, here, what's this?
There's like the one sort of like wise owl sitting at the back of the club going, you may ask me three tracks tonight and no more. I've heard some serious stories about club nights like over the years of people leaving the Spotify, not playing for Spotify Premium and having a playlist on and the ad coming up halfway through. I've heard of people putting on essential mixes or soul wax mixes and a big dirty ID comes in. What are the biggest sort of like mad war stories you've heard of other people's sets or other bits where you're oh my God.
I had a complete stinker on Simi Disco at the Stiff Kitten. We were DJing, and it was like we're warming up for them. They gave us like a nice opportunity to kind of warm up for them in our hometown. So yeah, back home, all our mates there. And then the news came through that day that Whitney Houston died. So we're like, fuck, we need to get Whitney Houston tuned to play at the end of the set. These were the days it was just I downloaded it blindly off some website, like a free download of this. I want to dance with somebody. And then Jazz had finished up. And then Anto, who was running the Stiff Kitten at the time, was like, oh, you can play the one last tune, you know, like a tribute tune kind of thing. Just whacked it on. Didn't even hear it. We had Serato at the time. I remember putting it on. And it was like a hard dance version of I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Like Lisa Lash's remix. Really distasteful.
It was like she was turning her grave listening to that herself. It was like the worst tribute.
It was like wham, 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 wham.
It had a drop and all, and the big build up.
It was EDM. It was an EDM mix, but like more of a sort of like, you know, Nucleus Records, you know, like old hard dance.
That's tragic.
Everyone had to stop it after like a minute.
Yeah, like people were a bit like, what is going on? And it was all a bit, you know, confused and drunk and sort of.
I know, I couldn't even get to the stage to turn it off myself, but it was like, I had a couple of Whitney Houston nightmares actually, come to think of it.
What's the other one?
The other one I remember playing in Birmingham by myself. I don't know why you couldn't do it that one time. And I remember playing in a bar in the early days. Bar gigs are always quite hard. Usually you work a lot, they kind of get the crowd going. And then I thought it'd be good to play like a Whitney Houston versus Kraftwerk tune, which is actually quite good.
I like that tune.
Yeah, it's good, but it absolutely stunk the place out. The point where I could feel the crowd, like the hatred.
I played at Latitude there, like not last year, the year before. And I was playing in the forest at about like 2 a.m., and I was like, it was the first time I was testing out my new sort of like, kind of like drony kind of ambient style, minimal kind of set. And I was like, right, I'll do it. A forest will be fucking perfect for it. I got about 15 minutes in, a load of people had turned up. 15 minutes in, I cleared a forest and everything. Like, I've cleared a dance floor before, but I cleared a forest. I was a logger, yeah. And I planned it for about like 2 weeks going, this is going to be fucking epic. And then after 15 minutes, I just reverted the form and started playing fucking disco tunes and stuff.
Yeah, that's it.
When you always think of somewhere it's going to be, it's going to be perfect for this. Like, sunset set in Croatia. And you're just like, nah, that's not, these tunes don't work.
It is funny that you pre-plan a stuff. We've definitely done that loads of times. We're like, right, and you second guess yourself. It's like, right, I know we'll get this all dialed down. There's been times we've thought like we're gonna play like an example would be like we were playing like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning. We'd come finish the live tour, and we thought we were just gonna play a load of hard techno. Everyone would love that. And, you know, just get it really wrong.
It's heartbreaking as well. It really is heartbreaking because you'll have spent so long.
You're all excited, you know what I mean?
It does. It never works out that way. So, like, you signed to Ninja Tune, which is a really great home for you. In like, obviously, I don't know what the ins and outs of it, but for me, from like the outside, I was like, wow, that's smooth moves from both. Like, you did the first album with them, and now you're sitting at the second album. When's it coming out? What's the release date?
22nd of January.
And what's it called?
Isles.
And yeah. It's got something to do, like, I mean, I haven't read the press release because I hate fucking press releases. I'd rather just sit and chat to you about it.
The name's really just we're at exactly the halfway point where we've lived pretty much bang on half our life in Ireland and half our life over in London, in sort of like mainland England. And it just really sort of we've kind of identified definitely the influences from both places are very, very different, and it's definitely come together to kind of form what we'd say is our sound, not our sound, but our entire style is based around kind of, you know, the early stuff that we had experienced in Northern Ireland and then coming across to London. And it's really just about kind of, and the push and pull between there's such opposing places, like Northern Ireland being a lot more conservative, but also having all those amazing countercultures and those sort of, That you know, the underground really means something in Northern Ireland, I think, whereas London, it's just sort of standard. There's underground everywhere, do you know what I mean? And London's a lot more maybe comfortable in its own skin. There's lots of very successful sort of underground culture, and it's just so multicultural, whereas Northern Ireland's obviously just it's not nowhere near as multicultural, but it has these little, you know, little like pockets of highly in-depth. I mean, we were, all our friends when we were younger, we used to all share a Tallow Disco when we were like 18, 19. Mm-hmm. And it was a real thing. And we kind of liked the music from a tongue-in-cheek perspective. We didn't really like the music as music. It was more, we just thought the ridiculous synths and some of the vocals and the drum programming was so over the top. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, there was this...
And the contrast to techno that you would go out to and listen. We'd put that on in a pre-party.
Yeah, we'd
have everyone be just dancing.
Like blasting the Tallow going, yeah! But it's like, I think, you know, that would probably go... that's sort of almost approaching music sometimes from like a jokey side, but also the in-your-face intensity definitely resonates more in Northern Ireland and maybe less so. Things are a bit cooler, deeper in London, you know what I mean? When I say cooler, I mean that as in sort of...
Serious.
Like serious and chilled out.
Yeah, chin-stroking.
The serious record collectors and...
Yeah, it's a bit like more chin-stroking.
If you say you're like you like this music, there's going to be about 100 more people that have got like the best collections of whatever music.
That's far less crack. I mean, it's not built in to me to go for a night out. And this is why, like I love dance music and I'm a massive dance music fan and have been for like the guts of about a decade. I was a indie boy before that, but
yeah.
I don't like going clubbing. Like, and it's,
yeah, I mean,
I don't know what it is that I like. I just don't really enjoy going clubbing. I'll just stick it on and go running to it or whatever. But I never got bit by the club bug.
I think it's a different, there's certain nights I used to love, like Theo Parrish would play at Plastic People all night. And you know, when you hear someone's full record collection and it's paced like that, and it's like in a comfortable environment for the DJ, it's like when we play in Robert Johnson, you get a very different set than we play. I mean,
Robert Johnson's magical. Like,
that's the place in Frankfurt, isn't it?
Yeah. And like,
I went there last year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
good or bad?
It was, well, one of my friends was getting married, and he for his stag do, he wanted to go to Robert Johnson, and then a friend of his got like an industrial estate in Miltenberg, and through a 2-day rave, there was biker gangs landing down, and it was the fucking weirdest thing that I've ever done. Yeah. I don't know if I'd do it again, but it was good crack. Yeah, I'd be like, that Robert Johnson place is pretty cool.
It's like a living room. You're just DJing for like a very small audience, and it means that you can really delve in. It is like,
but it comes alive. It's 6 to 7 in the morning when the sun comes up, and it really feels like the day after that. The place, we've had some amazing experiences where you can start playing the deepest music that you've got in your folder, and it kicks off. People are like, you can play 8-minute, 12-minute tracks, and people are hanging on every beat to the very end, which is incredible. You don't get that many other places. It is when the sun comes up there, it's that you just get another energy.
And just like when I moved to London, it would be like I'd go to Fabric by myself to watch Ricardo Villalobos at 6 o'clock in the morning and sit there for 5 hours, and he could just be playing like straight beats that don't really change much. It's just very minimal, but like getting locked in, all that kind of stuff, and kind of, it is very like hypnotic and meditative almost.
Did you have to be on drugs to be able to sit there for 5 hours when you were doing it yourself at that age, or were you able to go and just zone in on that, it completely sober?
Well, I had work and stuff, so I'd go there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then you'd feel like you're on drugs because the sound system Fabric's so intense. I was actually talking to Matt about it the other day, that I'd go in there in the dark at 6 in the morning, come out and meet people at lunchtime and feel like I've been like, I'm completely pissed and disorientated, but it was literally just being in that environment. Not like, I wasn't even drinking. It was just a case of like, you're in that intensity and getting really locked into it. It is like that kind of meditative stuff where people would be like, you know, like if you meditate for like hours, you get into like a different state. But when you're locked in, concentrating on you're not really concentrating on anything apart from just like listening to music and just like actually dancing. It's like a different experience, and I can kind of see why. Like, I would never do that unless I was by myself. And I don't think if I go clubbing now, I'm kind of stuck in the back room. So it's very rare, unless I'm at Panorama Bar or Robert Johnson, that I actually get involved in the dance floor.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I'm a shit dancer and I've got a short attention span, so that's probably another reason why. Going back to the sort of concept of the record really quickly, I find it at this age, like, there's not much difference in age between us three. And I find that I'm seeing it with my mates big time, and I'm feeling it myself. This is stick or twist time, whether you stay in England or wherever it is that you've gone to make your home, or you move home, and there's a shit ton of ones moving home. And I'm one of these people that's getting that sort of tug to go back and live in Northern Ireland. Do you feel that, or how do you feel?
I get it sometimes, but the thing is though, it's just like, I think, and it is, it's I think the options that have for like things like food in London, it's just like, you can just never, ever, every meal can be so exciting. You go out just every Saturday, if you want to do something, there's something you can do. Yeah. Not that I have many Saturdays off, a lot this year, but not normally. But I think London's just still very exciting. It's quite hard to know. Also the weather, about 5 degrees warmer. It's just like, I get home a lot, but I don't know. Maybe in the future.
Yeah, you're not going to move back for the weather anyway.
No, I know that. I mean, that's the one I think I keep bringing up to my missus, because I live in Brighton. And I keep saying, like, you know, what about moving home? She's like, going, do you not see what the fucking weather's like back home?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a constant cyclone.
Yeah, and it is. It's hard to know. A lot of my friends are doing the same. I think. Another thing for us is just, it's, if we moved home, we'd be doing is getting a flight from City Airport to Heathrow and then starting our journey again. Or it's just jumping on a train in London. That was one of the draws to London in the first place, was that it was just, it's a hub that you can fly anywhere from. And I mean, who knows what travel is going to look like in the future anyway, and what will be happening. I suppose Dublin, you're supposed to be flying from Dublin. It's hard to know. But certainly even getting the, you know, things like the Eurostar, like we were on the last tour getting trains to Amsterdam and Belgium and France, Paris. A lot more, because we prefer the train. It's a nicer experience. But alone for just being able to hop on a train and get somewhere to Europe in London with all your gear, it's just so easy, you know. And it would be a lot harder to do what we do, not being anywhere apart from really London or Amsterdam or Dublin. I mean, Dublin maybe, but Dublin just feels like the same as London. Do you know what I mean? Really, it's like you're not solving anything.
Big time.
I think we're just making excuses.
Like, no, I'm not going back. Fuck it. Here, lads, like, I'm very excited about this album. I have to say, like, I already feel that, like, Apricots is connecting in a way similar to the Glue has. This might be your Don't Look Back in Anger, if the other one's Wonderwall. we'll find out. But I'm excited to hear the whole record, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for having us. Great to chat.
Yeah, cheers for having us.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.